A new mess in Brazil, days before the World Cup.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Mark Garrison, in for David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and economics. There is traffic chaos in Brazil as it prepares to host the first match of soccer's World Cup Thursday. A transit strike has Sao Paulo's streets jammed. It is the latest worry about Brazil's readiness to host the giant event. The BBC's Jonathan Fruin joins us to talk about the country's challenges and the growing skepticism among Brazilians about the Cup will offer them. Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. So visitors are already there for the Cup and more are coming. How much of a problem will this be if the strike isn't resolved before the opening match?
Well, you know, I suspect that it will cause a high degree of mayhem if they can't resolve this ahead of the opening matches later this week. The background is that there's this court ruling that happened over the weekend that said that the strikes that were ongoing in the transport sector were illegal, but union leaders rallied their troops, so to speak, and they voted strongly in favour of continuing. And there have been some accusations that the unions are trying to use the World Cup as a means of extracting a better deal. Well, they say their negotiations for wages always go on at this time of year, but at the same time, those negotiations started last month, so maybe they're dragging on a bit.
Well, let's put this in context. There are many other concerns about readiness in this and other cities, and many Brazilians are raising questions about whether the money spent getting ready for the World Cup could have been put to better use. How is the Cup in general playing out in Brazil?
It's fair to say there is a degree of skepticism about whether the money has been spent wisely. There are still, though, issues around stadiums that are requiring last-minute testing to make sure that they can handle the capacities that need to be going into them, and so on and so forth.
Okay, the BBC's Jonathan Fruin. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
A landmark trial begins today in a long simmering case involving the NCAA. A federal judge will consider whether college athletes should get a cut of the money schools make from broadcast rights and merchandise. Marketplace's Annie Baxter reports.
The lawsuit against the NCAA strikes at the heart of the organization's amateurism rules. Under the rules, current and former student-athletes cannot profit from colleges' use of their names, images, and likenesses.
The plaintiffs would say these rules are not essential to college sports, that they actually lead to exploitation of student-athletes.
Michael McCann is a sports law expert at the University of New Hampshire. He says the class action suit against the NCAA aims to give football players and men's basketball players a cut of the billions of dollars in revenue they help generate. They're the reason schools bring in big money from television rights. Mark Conrad, a sports law expert at Fordham University, expects the NCAA will argue that not all schools can afford to share revenue with students. He says only a few programs have major media deals.
Most schools, even though they derive revenues from the system, they have to spend it. And athletic departments are very expensive to run.
Some of their biggest costs? Coaches' salaries. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are up in global trading, shares on the rise in Europe, including up about a 10% in Germany. Asian markets closed up, and record closes Friday on Wall Street. The S&P rose 0.5% to finish at 1949. The Dow also up 0.5%, ending at 16,924.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by United Healthcare, with information on doctors, treatment options, and cost estimates for patients to make educated health decisions, online at uhc.com. And by Zillow, with homes for sale, historical pricing data, and photos all available on Zillow.com or on their mobile apps. Zillow, find your way home. Education reporting on Marketplace is supported in part by the Kresge Foundation, working to expand opportunities in America's cities. More at kresge.org.
The latest employment numbers show job growth and unemployment holding at 6.3%, but we still can't call this a strong job market. For one, not enough people are quitting their jobs. It may sound strange, but more people quitting turns out to be a hopeful economic sign because it means they're confident they'll find better jobs. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports on how voluntary quitting is starting to pick up and what that means.
I start with a pretty unscientific survey. 20 to 30-somethings milling around after an electronic dance party one recent Sunday in Portland, Oregon. I ask if anyone's just quit their job.
I wasn't planning on staying a paralegal forever. It was work felt a bit of a grind.
I was working at a bakery. Every time I went to the bakery, my entire insides were like on fire and I didn't want to be there. I've been ready to get back into my own business and I quit.
I was manufacturing saw chain. The air inside the place is nasty and failures from OSHA. I decided I'm just giving up on manufacturing altogether.
Job shifters Will Patillo, now studying electrical engineering, Rachel Maddox, launching her life coach business, and Jesse Allen, who wants to teach hip-hop instead of making chainsaws. And this is exactly what economists hope young people will start to do more of now that the economy's improving. Get bored in some low-skilled, not-that-interesting job and try on something new, something that starts to look more like a career than a mere job. Heidi Scherholz at the Economic Policy Institute.
The ability to move jobs is really important for people who are younger, who are still trying to figure out what their interests are, what their skills are, where they want to live.
Scherholz says because of the recession, many young people got stuck in lousy jobs for years on end, afraid or unable to move. Now, as job opportunity and mobility increase, they can start to catch up. Neda Zamani graduated from a small liberal arts college in Iowa in 2010.
A third of us were going to be going to move home and live with our parents, and that was very scary.
The job she'd hoped for disappeared in a hiring freeze. She ended up back at the college working in the admissions office. Now she's packing up, about to start an MBA program at USC.
Even though it is a certain level of unknown, I'm able to see it as a return on an investment.
Optimism about costly career investments. That's been a rare thing until now. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And finally, if you caught the new Game of Thrones last night, you helped the show slay a family of Jersey mobsters. The series is now averaging 18.4 million viewers an episode, just beating out The Sopranos to be HBO's most popular series ever. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
There are some questions in the business world that are just screaming to be answered.
How do buffets figure out the price to charge customers in order to still make a profit? Do they know the average amount that each customer eats?
I'm Kai Rizdahl, our series I've Always Wondered, next time on Marketplace from APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.